could be a problem.
Yeah, I don't know why she did that.
We'll proceed anyway. The next case is Patel versus Gonzalez.
Send the
Did you find her?
She was here. She just
I know. Well, I don't know. We should wait here. What? See if you can see her out there. If somebody can find her.
Otherwise, she could skip over to 4.
Huh? Well, she knows she's next. No?
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll move on to
All right, 4. If he doesn't find her in the next minute or so, we're just going to go to the next case, and then we'll do yours after that. Find her? All right, let's go to proceed to the next case. It's United States versus...
He's out looking for her.
What?
He's out looking for her.
United States versus TD. Who is?
Mr. Mwongit.
Oh, great.
Oh, no.
Well, I'm sorry. I called the wrong... case, incidentally. All right, let's go where we were then. You okay?
I'm fine. I'm sorry. I had an urgent nature call. My name is Mary Sashadi. I apologize for delaying this oral argument for a few seconds. I represent the petitioner, Manal Patel, who comes before this court asking this court to review the denial of a motion to reopen, which she had filed upon discovering that she was subject to deportation. The board denied the motion to reopen for the reason that she had failed to exercise due diligence. What was due diligence in this case? This is a family that came from South Africa, a tiny Indian minority who had been very abused during the apartheid regime. It was consisted of a father, mother, and 3 daughters. The father applied for asylum shortly after coming here. The asylum application was denied by the asylum office despite the fact that the State Department had recommended the grant of asylum.
Well, of course, the government takes issue with your characterization of what the State Department had said. I mean, they
well,
say
it's in the record. The recommendation is part of her motion.
Well, but they say it's really just one of those, you know, she's made a plausible claim to be a refugee. Let's go forward. State Department usually doesn't issue personalized recommendations.
Well, in this
asylum.
Case, which surprised me, in this case... Back then, it did because it had the benefit of his application for asylum, which the asylum office had forwarded on to the State Department. And it's in the record, Your Honor, exactly, I can't quote a page number, but it was part of the materials that she submitted in support of her motion to reopen.
And in any event, I guess there are 2 things that bother me about this petition. One of them is that you seem to be taking the position that it was inappropriate for the IJ to draw an inference from the circumstantial evidence that existed that she knew about the order. And her sister had moved promptly. She's living under the same roof as her father. He's making all these calls. So there's circumstantial evidence. And the board definitely does, or, you know, the IJ draws an inference. And people draw inferences all the time from circumstantial evidence. So I don't know why that is somehow wrong here. And the other thing that bothers me, frankly, I'm not even sure we would get to it, but on the underlying merits, to the extent there's been change in South Africa, it's been, according to State Department reports and all of the things I'm aware of, in a positive direction. Whether this family was suffering way back when, under the apartheid era, isn't the same thing in the posture of this case where it's a motion to reopen.
The question of drawing inferences from evidence is that the board made certain assumptions about what it was that Manal Patel received by way of her FOIA request. She did not receive anything that pertained to her sister's application or her status.
Well, she refers to her family. The earlier proceeding, of course, as you acknowledge, was a consolidated one, the father with the derivative claims of the other family members. And as I recall, the sister's affidavit refers to something like the claims of myself and my family.
That was her perception of what happened to her family, but that perception can't be imputed to what this petitioner experienced, because this petitioner had an application for adjustment of status that the INS had accepted during that whole period of time. She had paid the fees. They never told her, I'm sorry, but you have to go back to the immigration court and file this. So she believed, what she believed was that she was doing what she had to do in the time period that the board says she lacked due diligence. And it was able to buttress this determination based on Manal Patel's affidavit, which was a copy of the affidavit that Manal Patel filed to support her successful motion to reopen. If that affidavit had never been filed, would the board's decision have been the same? I think so, because the board would have said, I'm sorry, but you didn't file within the 90-day period when you discovered your immigration status. Well, when did she discover her immigration status? She certainly didn't discover the totality of her immigration status by the board's March 8, 2002 order. She discovered her immigration status when she was told by the Chicago District Office 27 months after she filed her application, I'm sorry, we can't consider your application. You've got
And that, of course, is the fact finding. That's a fact that she is asserting here through you, but the board finds, contrary to that, that she in fact discovered this through the circumstantial evidence earlier. Later, let's say, than November 2002, when Manal moves to reopen.
If she discovered anything through her sister's FOIA request, the board has said you did not exercise due diligence in discovering the status, your immigration status. Not that they said you didn't assert due diligence by filing the motion to reopen around the same time as your sister, Manal. That's not what they're saying. Discover her immigration status. As far as she knew, she had discovered whatever she had by filing her application for adjustment of status with the Chicago District Office. Equitable estoppel contains some elements here. One is knowledge of a wrong, and two is knowledge of sufficient facts upon which to file a claim and assert rights. There's a difference in this case. The wrong that the board ascribes to her is her discovery, if in fact she discovered it, that her counsel was ineffective. And that was a discovery that her sister made through her FOIA request. But what facts does she have to support the motion to reopen? At the time that this supposed discovery was made, she had already filed her application for adjustment of status with the Chicago District Office. And because they didn't reject it out of hand immediately, she felt that she was doing what she had to do. This is a case that's somewhat similar to the Burnett case that the Supreme Court decided, in which somebody files a civil action in one court in the belief that they are filing it in the right place, when it turns out that the case is dismissed for lack of jurisdiction. Then now the statute of limitations has gone beyond the period of time, and they file in the right court after having received a dismissal order from the other court. Now, is the statute of limitations raised as a defense in that case? The Supreme Court said no, because you have two parallel authorities, two parallel jurisdictions, and one shouldn't be prejudiced by thinking that you belonged in this jurisdiction when, in fact, you belonged in that jurisdiction. And it seems to me that that is a case that's exactly on point here. And the Supreme Court also went on to say that when you apply the doctrine of equitable estoppel, you do so in the interest of justice and fairness. And where you have a situation where a person believes that they have done in good faith what they think they're supposed to have done, only to discover years later that they haven't, and then they try to amend it by going to the right place, is that not a good application, not a good situation for the application of equitable estoppel? And that's what I think exists here.
Well, but you know, for better or for worse, this happens a lot, since apparently no one in the various immigration agencies talks to anyone else in other offices of those agencies. And I can't even think of the number of cases where somebody applies for adjustment of status and there's a parallel track off somewhere else for removal, or sometimes it's been an abused child and one office is sending bag and baggage letters and the other office is issuing letters saying that you can stay and so on. It happens fairly commonly. And I think your point is only that she wasn't really hiding from the immigration office. She was there in front of them asking for adjustment of status and was assuming that if there was some impediment to that, they would tell her. And I don't know, I guess their point would be, well, we don't have to tell you because you already knew you were under an order of deportation.
She, first of all, the attorney that was representing the family, principally the father, never informed anybody in the family of the existence of the March 8th
order. Well, that's again on the facts, but let's assume the facts are as the board or the IJ found them to be, that she learned about the deportation order at about the same time Manal did. What's your argument under those circumstances for equitable treatment here? I'm not sure it's equitable estoppel so much. Maybe it is.
If she learned about it at the same time that her sister Manal did,
mm-hmm.
you would. If I were the IJ, I would have to consider the fact that she had by that time, and even before the board's order was issued, promptly filed her application for adjustment of status some 10 days before the board issued its order.
Okay.
The second thing I would have to consider is whether the attorney, in good faith, gave her notice that there was such an order, because then she could have probably have withdrawn the application at this one jurisdiction and filed it at the other and corrected the mistake within 90 days. But the attorney concealed this fact, didn't tell them, and she had good reason to, because it would have disclosed her ineffectiveness by not filing a memorandum. So if I were the IJ in this case, I would have to give some tolerance to the fact that the circumstances in this case pointed to deception and concealment or simple omissions by the Chicago District Office. When they logged this case in, she had an alien registration number. They could have immediately have discovered that she had a removal case pending and had been pending for quite some time.
Are there any remaining avenues of relief for her, given
no.
that she's now married to a U.S. citizen?
She can only apply for adjustment of status, as she was instructed to do, before the immigration judge. That requires a motion to reopen. And the board has denied her that avenue. So what's left? She's going to go to South Africa for 10 years because she's under an order of deportation? Why is she being treated differently than her sister? I can't. This doesn't seem to me to be sensible, reasonable, or fair. Thank you.
Thank you. Bennato?
Good morning, Your Honors. Please, the court, Barry Pettinato, appearing on behalf of the respondent, Alberto Gonzalez. I think one of the things the court has to keep in mind in this case, we're talking about an untimely motion to reopen, which was made 2 years after the board's original decision back on March 8th, 2002 was when the board summarily dismissed.
Right. What evidence is there that Patel herself knew or should have known that she was under an order of deportation in 2002? In other words, are you relying solely on the inference that her family told her, or is there some independent evidence of what she knew?
There isn't, Your Honor. I think Judge Wood has it absolutely correct. This is a case where there was abundant circumstantial evidence that, in fact, that the father, both Manal and her father, knew about the board's order in that period of time, September, October, November of 2002, that they knew that the entire family was under an order of deportation. After all, you have to keep in mind that Manal was a minor when this happened. Her order was simply part of a greater picture related to the father being the principal asylum applicant and all the other members that were derivatives. Their status just flowed with his. And so the family knew at that point that they were under a final order.
But you see, the thing that troubles me here is that suppose that's right. What you are really criticizing her for is not appreciating the legal consequences or the legal avenues to take the next step, because she, as I said, isn't, you know, trying to bury herself into the middle of U.S. society. She's walking into what was then the INS office. She's filing motions with them. She's up front. She's right there. And instead of somebody saying, you're prima facie ineligible for this because you're under a standing order of what would then have been called deportation, they don't do anything. They process along. They, you know, they sit around, and it's not until 2 years later they say, oops, you know, by the way, you have to file a motion to reopen first.
Well, Your Honor, I think I know you appreciate this because you see a lot of these cases and you understand this parallel track thing where there's removal proceedings are entirely separate and then there's application.
But is that fair to people who are not as well-versed in the immigration laws as you are?
Well,
I mean, it seems very...
Well, Your Honor,
awful that it's such a game.
I know, but you have to keep in mind that the courts are entirely a separate agency than what was then the INS. They're entirely two separate agencies. But I think it really loses sight of what the dispositive issue in this case is, Your Honor. We're looking at, did she exercise due diligence?
Well, but
I'm
saying if due diligence has to be measured as a whole, including the fact that she's pursuing the adjustment of status, it doesn't look like she sits around for 2 years and tries to stay in the United States and then finally files the motion to reopen. If due diligence is viewed very narrowly and the particular motion isn't filed until, you know, the much later time period, the case takes on a very different approach.
Well, Your Honor, I think it can, the question can be viewed very narrowly, and that's it. That's it. The question is, at the point that she had enough information to know that, in fact, she had been rendered ineffective assistance of counsel, at that point, once she obtained that knowledge, what did she do to remedy it? And that's the critical question here. What did she do?
Did she know she needed to take that step? Maybe she thought she was remedying it by filing the motion for adjustment.
Your Honor,
granted, a different office and a different track.
The law presumes that she knows that she has to remedy a claim of ineffective assistance of counsel. Your Honor, if aliens aren't held to trying to remedy the ineffective assistance of counsel upon learning it, which is what due diligence and equitable tolling is all about, then you could have aliens, you know, as we're trying to put them on the plane, alleging ineffective assistance of counsel and that they just learned this. So there is
but
this
requirement. I understand that. We don't want that. But all I'm saying is if she thought that the way to remedy it was through this other avenue, then we don't have the specter of people all of a sudden at the last second thinking of some avenue.
Your Honor, the faultiness of that is the fact that her sister Manal appreciated the fact that the remedy was a motion to reopen for ineffective assistance
of counsel.
Well, now
you're making a much broader assumption about how much she knows from Manal. Your first argument is just that the circumstantial evidence shows that she realized that the earlier order was out there. All right, maybe it does. But now you're kind of cloning them.
No, I didn't mean to. I was saying in a just totally separate and apart from Ms. Patel, you can see from the actions of her sister Manal that aliens, in fact, do frequently appreciate that they must file a motion to reopen. I'm not imputing that Ms. Patel actually knew. I'm not trying to clone the two of them I'm not trying to make that point. I'm just saying generally, looking at Ms. Manal as an alien generally, here she knew, she appreciated that in order to remedy a claim of ineffective assistance of counsel, she had to file a motion to reopen. And we're talking about 2 years later when she actually did file the motion. And this is the context of motions to reopen that the Supreme Court and Boudou and Doherty and this court have said are strongly disfavored for this very reason. Aliens have to act upon their rights and do it expeditiously if they want to get a remedy like this, equitable tolling of time limits. She's essentially 21 months out of time from the 90-day requirement. Now,
can you imagine any reason why, other than not knowing?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. What are you asking?
Can you give me any reason other than her not being aware that she would have, you know, waited the 21 months?
Your Honor, I don't know what was going on in this family's mind or Ms. Patel's mind at the time that all this information was coming out. But from the record, it's from Ms. Manal's sworn affidavit, which was Ms. Patel submitted in support of her own motion to reopen. It's very clear that this is sort of a frantic time. Manal is learning from first the INS that she's under an order. Then she does the FOIA request. She shares both the letter from the INS and the FOIA request with her father. Her father then realizes, oh, my God, the attorney that I hired never filed a brief, putting the board summarily dismissed the case. The entire family's now under an order. He's making frantic phone calls trying to track down the attorney. He's making visits to her office. In the meantime, Ms. Patel is living under the roof of her father. When all this is going on and when her sister is filing a motion to reopen on her own behalf based on ineffective assistance of counsel, and if you look to Ms. Patel's own affidavit that she submitted in support of her motion, in order to insulate herself from having this knowledge imputed to her, she says in her affidavit that during this 15-month period of time that she was living under her father's roof, she didn't have time to speak to her parents. She was busy working at her husband's new business, whatever. But anyways, her words are that she didn't have time. There was no time to speak to my parents during that time. That is wholly incredible that she could have lived in the household and not have learned this knowledge.
Now, Ms. Sfasciati is right, isn't she? There are no avenues left for her.
Well, the avenue is she can attempt to, like many aliens who marry United States citizens, she can attempt to immigrate through an immigrant visa. Now, the rebuttal to that is going to be that she may be subject to the unlawful presence bars. However, those are waivable. The agency may agree to give her a waiver, but that's how many people immigrate to the United States through.
In other words, she has to go to South Africa.
Or if there's some other country she can go to and process overseas.
And wait 10 years.
No, if she's granted any of the waivers for her unlawful presence, then she's not going to be subject to the bar.
Do we have statistics on how often,
the waivers?
Yeah.
Your Honor, I don't know. I don't know them off. There may be the INS or DHS is collecting them. I'm just not aware of that fact, whether they are what they are.
What section of justice did you come from?
I'm actually one of those rare attorneys that actually has come from the Office of Immigration Litigation, where this is what we do. there's another one in the here today you'll be hearing from, but we have several that are these people from other parts of the agency that are that are writing, picking up the overload that oil is experiencing and the courts are experiencing on these immigration cases.
This one is really awful, isn't it?
Well, Your Honor,
I'm
all sympathetic,
awful, but this one is really.
I'm sympathetic to the point, Your Honor, because when these cases drag out, it's so often the case that aliens ultimately might be able to become eligible for some form of relief. And there's always a tug at the heartstring of what the equities in the case are. But I think you have to return to what are we looking at here? We're looking for an abuse of discretion by the board, and that means what the board did had to have been arbitrary or capricious. And in this case, I don't think there's anything in the record that it would indicate that that decision is arbitrary or capricious. There's nothing further.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thanks very much, both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.